She's from Ohio State University. And she's going to present identifying genes involved in pollination-induced corolla senescence in petunia.
So. Thank you. All right. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming out this early morning. One of the characteristics that influences the retail shelf life and also the consumer performance of a lot of ornamentals is flower longevity. And so I won't give you a lot of details about flower senescence because we already had a really nice introduction. But one of the things we're interested in is why in some flowers like petunia you have an acceleration of flower senescence by pollination. And this allows the plant to then remobilize nitrogen and other nutrients from the senescent corolla before it shed to parts of the flower like the developing fruit. And so what you can see here is Dr. Jang talked about petunias, Mitchell diploid. This is the same variety that we use. That in an unpollinated flower you have senescence way over here at about 6 to 8 to 9 days depending on the environmental conditions. But when you pollinate that flower, by 2 days after pollination it's extremely wilted. And what you can see up here, this is a stigma and a style, shows you where the pollen tubes are growing at these different time points. So it takes between 24 and 36 hours for the pollen tubes to actually reach the base of the style, and then fertilization happens sometime after that. So we have a signal that definitely precedes fertilization that is inducing this flower wilting and senescence. Flower wilting in the petunia is preceded by a peak of ethylene production. You can see here at about 36 hours after pollination. And even at the earlier time points, around 18 hours, you're starting to detect some ethylene production from that corolla. So we wanted to get a global profile of the transcript changes in a pollinated corolla. So we did an RNA-seq experiment. We concentrated on those earlier time points before the visual symptoms of flower senescence to try to look for the master switch, the earlier genes that are inducing flower senescence, and also to find out how early the degradative parts of the senescence pathway are actually starting to occur. So this is a lot of information just to summarize our methods, but the main thing I want to point out here is that we had the three time points, 12, 18, and 24 hours after pollination. We also had unpollinated flowers at the same developmental age so that they could be compared. We had three biological replications of each of the time points, so that gave us a total of 18 different libraries that were sequenced. We did a de novo assembly of that sequence, and I'll tell you a little bit more about the analysis of that sequence data very briefly as we go through the results. So just to summarize, we generated about half a billion reads from this sequencing project, so a lot of sequence data. This was assembled into 161,000 contigs, and more importantly, we generated around a 33,000 gene unigene library. And we used the DNA, DE-seq2, to identify which genes were differentially expressed, primarily looking at differences between our pollinated and our unpollinated flower samples. And we identified over 4,746 differentially expressed genes. So that's a lot of gene changes in a very distinct tissue. This was only the corollas. And that represented over 400 different go terms. So we looked at that and we said, what do we do with this information? A lot of different biological processes obviously occurring very quickly after pollination. So one of the ways that we could get a little more biological information from this large data set of sequences was to use the WGCNA, which is a weighted gene correlation network analysis. And basically, we were looking for gene expression patterns over all of our time points that group together that might suggest networks of genes that would be involved in carrying out senescence and also inducing that early senescence signal. So this dendrogram here shows you when you're looking at that detail, you generate a lot of different modules of co-expressed genes. But what we were interested in was the three modules here, which are cyan, gray, and red. And these were the modules that were identified as being pollination specific. They were highly correlated with the pollination, the pollinated corolla samples. And within this module, over 60% of the differentially expressed genes that we identified before were actually located within these three modules. So this just shows you some heat maps that can summarize the gene expression patterns, the co-expression patterns within those three different modules. And again, I want to point out these are the early time points, so these are large gene profile changes that are happening very early after pollination, before we see those early symptoms of senescence, before fertilization, before ethylene evolution. And we really had kind of two groups here. The red, this is the pollinated samples, 12, 18, and 24. So in the red module, the genes were all induced at all of the pollinated time points from 12 through 24 hours. And then in the cyan or the blue ones and the gray module, they were strongly upregulated only at that 18-hour time point. So to determine some biological relevance of the genes within the module, you can do functional enrichment. You can look at the gene ontologies. So we looked at the various KEG pathways and to see which ones of the KEGs were actually enriched within these different modules. And so we didn't have any entire KEG pathways that were enriched within the cyan module. But in the gray module, we had three pathways that were significantly enriched. The most significant was regulation of autophagy. We also had peroxisome and endocytosis. So what you can see here with the regulation of autophagy, in that KEG pathway, and this is a KEG based on Arabidopsis genes, there's 15 Arabidopsis genes or gene families within that KEG. And in our petunia sequences, we had 10 of those 15. So that was a lot of representation of that pathway. In the red module, we had the pentose and glucuronate interconversions, plant pathogen interaction, and starch and sucrose metabolism. So basically, we're starting to get genes that are involved primarily in degradation pathways, degrading pectin in the cell walls, and sugar catabolism. And also, we have a lot of overlap with signaling calcium comodulin-based kinases that are involved also in plant pathogen interactions. So we're very interested in autophagy because it's a form of cell death, and there's increasing evidence that's involved in plant senescence as well as stress responses. So this just shows you the KEG pathway, and this is based on initially based on yeast and the autophagy genes that are induced in yeast. If you look here, you can see some gray, they might look kind of green, shaded boxes. These are all the genes within this autophagy KEG that have been identified in Arabidopsis. So if they're colored properly and they're all on here, there should be 15 of those. And then the red indicates the genes that we identified in petunia that were specifically upregulated in the pollinated samples. If you count them, there's only 9. I told you there was 10 genes. ATG4 is also in our sequences. It's upregulated, but it wasn't determined to be significantly upregulated. So that is the 10 genes. And if you look here, we have a nice complete coverage of the pathway, including autophagy induction, vesicle nucleation, and also the vesicle expansion and completion parts of the pathway. So I can't see the little clock. Am I okay?
Yeah, 7 minutes.
7 minutes, wow, a ton of time. Okay, so in order just to confirm some of these gene expression patterns, we did some real-time quantitative QRT-PCR. This is just one example. So this is the ATG6 gene from petunia. It's also called Becklin or VPS30 from the previous pathway. And you can see that we did still have that strong upregulation at that 18-hour time point. It's not as high as 12 and 24. When we continue this on further, this is about the time here at 48 when the corollas are starting to wilt. You also see that at about 36 hours, you also have a peak of that ATG6 gene expression. So we're still trying to work through some of the details of that, but there is some evidence in other systems that a lot of these autophagy pathways and senescence maybe either induced by dark, or they may be happening during the night. So within the ATG8 genes that were represented in that KEG pathway, we did identify three different ATG8s in Petunia in our sequencing experiment. So all three of these you can see here are actually quite significantly upregulated by pollination at that 18-hour time point. So Arabidopsis has 9 ATG8s, and so we have identified 3 within this sequence that seem to be upregulated during the pollination response. Lastly, in order to get a little more information about these networks that might be involved in this pollination-induced senescence, we did some string network analysis. And so what you can see here in this picture is these are the autophagy, regulation of autophagy genes in red that I showed you were in the earlier slides. These are the ones that we identified in Petunia. And then this process then identifies some of these other interacting partners that might be interesting to look at for further study. And the width of these lines indicates the significance of that interaction. And one of the things that we were particularly interested in was that this here is the ATG6, the Becklin gene, and it is interacting putatively with two different metacaspase genes in our Petunia system. And we're also interested in metacaspases because they are proteases that are involved in cell death. Okay, so just to conclude, the RNA sequencing project that we did with the transcriptome, we generated a lot of very interesting sequence and identified thousands of genes that were upregulated very early in the pollination response. Some of these are those that are involved in degradation processes, so these are happening very early. And then we also did identify a number of transcription factors and kinases and genes that we hope are involved in really signaling to the corolla that it's time to senesce. And again, just to point out that these happen very early after pollination. And so our future direction is to look at the functional analysis of many of these genes. We have used the virus-induced gene silencing system in Petunia, and we're pursuing that for some functional characterization. So lastly, I want to acknowledge Sean Broderick. He was a PhD student. This was his dissertation work. He did an excellent job with all of this. He has some very nice collaborators in our Molecular and Cellular Imaging Center that helped with the bioinformatics, Acela, Serenga, and Taya. Without them, it wouldn't have been possible for us to figure out what to do with this overwhelming amount of information. So lastly, I want to acknowledge funding from the D.C. Kiplinger Floriculture Endowment. So if I have a few minutes, I'll take questions. Yes?
Are there any known sequences of metacaspases?
The question was, are there any known sequences of metacaspases in Petunia?
Yes,
actually, we've been working on two metacaspases that we cloned from Petunia quite a few years ago. It's a kind of been a very ongoing process. We're trying to understand what their role really is in senescence. We've done some transgenic work with them, and they don't really show any kind of very obvious phenotype, but we really still strongly believe they're involved in senescence. So the two that we identified here were actually one that we had identified previously as being senescence related, and then there's a new one that we've pulled out from this sequence.
Slightly unrelated, but so what is the advantage to the flowers if senescence related signals are being induced much prior to fertilization? And what is the advantage of this? The idea would be that fertilization should lead to production.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the question was, what's the advantage to the flower to have this pollination-induced senescence that occurs so early before fertilization? I think there's a point at which the flower realizes, or you know, there's signaling that suggests that pollination has occurred and that it's a compatible pollination, that the pollen tubes are a certain length and that they will likely get to the end of the style and fertilize. And so for the flower and for the benefit of the plant as a whole, The earlier it can induce senescence of the corolla and allow for remobilization of as many nutrients as possible to that developing seed, that's the best benefit, because maintaining that floral structure, those petals, especially in petunia, is very costly. A lot of water loss, takes a lot of energy input. So I think that it is very beneficial to remobilize as much as quickly as possible.
I have 1 minute for one more question.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit, stupid question, but you talk about the ethylene peak that's derived from the flower itself. Which floral tissue does that actually come from?
Okay. No, that was a good... That was a good question. So specifically the peak that I showed you? So the question was, which floral organs does the ethylene peak come from? And that was a very good question. So what I showed you was just the ethylene that's actually produced by just the corolla. But if you look at the sequential ethylene production in a pollinated flower, you get a peak of ethylene production from the stigma within about an hour, within a few minutes. And then actually, if you can dissect the style, you can't really do this in petunia because of the wounding response, but you can in other flowers. You can dissect and you can see that there's basically a wave of ethylene that moves down the style. And then the ovary produces ethylene and then the corolla. So ethylene is definitely involved in that signaling. And so that's part of the signaling pathway.
Related to that, maybe it's interesting to look at that when you treat a flower with the ethylene and compare with your
mother. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to see if those are the same genes that are being induced. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.